to me softly. Writing topics.
Topic number one. Looks like garbage.
Yep.
Topic number two. Sounds like garbage.
Sounds like garbage. Topic number three. Plays like garbage.
Smells like garbage.
Anyway, that's my hair story. I don't know what to do with my hair.
That's my hair story, and I'm hair sticking to it.
Okay.
All right.
That was a stretch.
Yep. Way to go, Armstrong.
You're welcome. See, it's funny because my arms are actually quite weak.
It's the time of the season when love runs high. In this time, give it to me easy and let me try with pleasured hands to take you in the sun to promised lands to show you everyone it's the time.
And welcome back to another episode of Why Did You Watch This? I'm your host for this week, Lee, the fucking Prince of Darkness, Delahanty.
And I'm Chris, one D-A-R bitch, Ravel.
And I'm Brendan, fun is fun, but done is done, Drishler.
And if you could not guess from those nicknames, we have just finished watching Stephen King's Riding the Bullet. I don't have the facts of the movie in front of me,
but
somebody else
quick,
does.
Chris?
Was directed by Mick Garris, and it was released in October of 2004.
Yeah.
Okay, and starring, just real quick, give us a few.
It's
Jonathan Jackson.
Starring Jonathan Jackson, David Arquette, and Cliff Robertson.
Barbara Hershey. I would have thrown Barbara Hershey above
Cliff Robertson. Cliff Robertson is a notable cameo.
Yes. Erica Christensen is in there, too.
Nikki Cat.
You know, that actor, everyone
Who's who of who cares?
So yeah, we're going to get into this movie.
Truly. Oh, poor Cliff Robertson.
I know, poor all. There are good actors there. Barbara Hershey's a fine actor.
Yeah.
First things first, though, we'd be remiss without talking about what we drank.
That's right.
Movie.
You guys, this was a fun experience.
So yeah, this is something I think we're going to take to a couple parties after this, because it was a good time. So as discussed 2 weeks ago, we did the concept of taking a bullet shot, so riding the bullet, to bring the element of, like, fate or chance or, like, you know, fear in there. We randomized the shot. We came up with 6 liquors and 6 mixers, and then we rolled 2 six-sided dice to see, and, you know, one of them corresponds to the liquor, one corresponds to the mixer, to see what we got. And we did this 3 times through the course of the movie. So just a really quick, the liquors we had at play was lemon rum, tequila, gin, vodka, whiskey, Calvados apple brandy. I'm not going to name brands. Some of them were good, some of them were bad. Okay?
Yeah.
There was some party, there was some local gin, okay?
Yeah,
it was a mix.
But like local really good.
Local really good. No, local means good.
Yeah, yeah.
Listen, shop local, guys.
But think globally.
But think that too.
Do you want this?
For mixers, we had cranberry juice, raspberry lemonade, OJ, Izzy sparkling apple, ginger beer, and triple sec.
Yep.
So round one, and I feel like we all had really good rounds until round 3.
Yeah. It's like the movie though, right? Like you press your luck twice and you do okay. You get like drivers who are kind of okay but a little weird,
and
then all goes to hell.
Yep. So round one, I got whiskey and sparkling apple, which was actually nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
That is a natural combo.
Yeah. Brendan, you got vodka and ginger beer. Which is just like a mule.
Yeah, no, it was basically a mule without the lime. It was fine.
Yeah, and Chris, you had tequila and sparkling apple.
And it, honestly, that sparkling apple took the edge of tequila off that usually kills me.
Yeah. Round two, I had lemon rum and raspberry lemonade, which was fucking delicious.
It was so good that Chris and I did a shot of that.
Yeah, I was so impressed with it that I decided to do
and
one.
It was yummy.
Yeah, it was. It really was.
Brendan, you had whiskey and OJ, which I was a little worried about.
It was, like, fine.
It was fine.
It wasn't great, but it wasn't, you know, I didn't want to throw up or anything afterwards.
On this road trip of shots, was that the Cliff Robertson cameo where it's like,
something's
off here?
Chris, you had gin and OJ.
And that's also the Cliff Robertson for me because it's like, no one should shoot gin. Just don't do it. It's not a good idea. But the OJ did soften it somewhat.
And then round 3 came along. I'm going to do me last because I think I had the worst.
All right, you did.
I think I had the best out of them.
Brendan, you had Calvados and cranberry juice.
Which was not good.
Yeah. I've never had this apple brandy today.
I had a little sip of it before we started. I did not love it. I'm a bit of a brandy person, but I just didn't care for that so much.
Chris, you had the Calvados and apple.
It was perfect. Like,
what God intended.
Yeah.
It tasted like the hardest hard cider you've ever had.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had whiskey and triple sec. Guys, it's not good.
Yeah, how would you describe it, Lee?
I very nearly came right back up after I swallowed it. My body rejected it.
Because it's like whiskey, it's JMO,
yeah,
which is very strong.
Yeah, it
and
was not a fun time.
You add the candy sweetness of triple sec
right.
to it, and it's like these
yeah.
two things.
I didn't even,
I didn't even fill
the shot glass all the way, because I was like, I can't.
No, I don't blame you, I wouldn't have.
Yeah, but it was very hard to swallow.
Pretty hard to smell, honestly.
Yeah.
I took a whiff of it.
It was not a good smell.
We all took a whiff, and it was like, yikes.
Yeah. It wasn't the worst shot I've had to do. I did a shot, a very similar shot, in the bar in Vancouver called Stormcrow that does, like, a D20 shot, like a D&D-themed thing.
Oh, yeah.
And I rolled a 1, which in D&D is very bad.
Yeah, it's a critical fail.
And the critical fail shot was tequila and Tabasco sauce. So not the worst shot I've done, because that takes the fucking game.
There is a bar at the North End that does the same thing with a D20, where, like, they have 20 drinks,
really?
Like, 20 cocktails, and you choose, like, you know... I forget
Let's
what it is.
Go.
I'll have to look it up. Rich and I have been there twice before, but it was, and I've never actually done that,
yeah.
but it sounded really neat.
Would you do it if we all went?
Yeah, totally.
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
All right, guys. Someone's going to tell me what the fuck happens in this movie.
I will help you out with that one. Set in 1969, Alan Parker is a young artist studying at the University of Maine, where his professor believes he is obsessed with death. On October 30th, his birthday, he thinks his girlfriend Jessica is trying to break up with him. Alan gets high in the bathtub and begins to contemplate suicide. The Grim Reaper appears and tries to convince Alan to kill himself so that he can come to the other side. Murals that people painted on the wall also appear to be urging him to kill himself. Alan accidentally cuts himself when Jessica and a group of friends startle him by coming in to surprise him for his birthday. Alan wakes up in the hospital. Jessica says she's angry with him for the selfish act he attempted to commit, but also tells Alan that she loves him. She surprises him with concert tickets to see John Lennon in Toronto. The whole sentence is, she surprises him with concert tickets to see John Lennon in Toronto, Ontario, Canada.
So not Toronto, Maine, right?
Right, exactly.
Okay.
Like, thank you for the specification. The next day, when Alan is released from the hospital, Jessica tells him that he has a wall around him, and Alan realizes that Jessica really was going to leave him. Alan gets a phone call that his mother, Jean, has had a stroke. He makes plans to go home that night, giving the concert tickets to his roommates. As he tries to hitchhike home to Lewiston, Maine, Alan remembers the funeral of his father, Julian, when he was 6 years old. He envisions the death of his mother and then himself with a devastated Jessica weeping at his grave. He is picked up by a Volkswagen van that is driven by Ferris, an army deserter. They narrowly miss colliding with an oncoming car, spinning out and landing in a ditch. Alan walks away from the incident shaken but alive. Alan begins to hallucinate and has multiple experiences with the living and the dead. He sees a billboard for the Ride the Bullet roller coaster at Thrill Village, which triggers a memory of him standing in line with his mother to ride it, where he ultimately chickened out. He walks through a cemetery and comes across the grave of George Staub, whose grave marker indicates that he died 2 years ago. Alan sees an apparition of himself come up through the ground. The apparition tells him that they are saving a place for him. He is then picked up by a man who he realizes is George Staub. His apparition accompanies him in the car and warns him not to give his real information because there's definitely something wrong with George. The apparition smells embalming fluid, which prompts Alan to remember a phrase that he read in a book, The Dead Travel Fast. Alan does not inform George that he knows that George is dead. George asks him about Thrill Village and asks if he rode the bullet, and Alan lies and said that he did go on the ride. George knows that Alan is lying, and he calls Alan by his name. George explains that he was decapitated in a car accident when he tried to pass a truck on a 2-lane road, and that he crashed into a produce truck when he swerved to avoid a collision with another car. George tells Alan that he has to take one person with him, and that Alan has to choose whether it be Alan's mother or himself. If he does not make a choice, George warns that he will have to take them both. In a moment of panic and fear, Alan chooses his mother to be taken. George throws Alan out of the car, and when he wakes up, Alan is back in the cemetery. He hitches the next ride and finally makes it to the hospital. He is about to go see his mother when George appears and beats him to the elevator. Alan, now in his 40s, says his mother died of a heart attack while watching television. He married his girlfriend Jessica, but it only lasted a little while. Alan never made a living as an artist, but he continues to paint as a hobby. He goes back to Thrill Village and rides the bullet.
Good job.
The end.
I find it interesting that that synopsis did not include the part where he hides in Throw Village as George is chasing him.
Yeah.
Which feels like, as you said when we were watching this, it feels like this is an important moment that's happening here when he rides the bullet. I also think it's interesting to note how brief the synopsis is. And you might think while listening to it, this is a good short story that's being said here.
Yeah, so here's the deal. And we're going to start with what I think is the most salient takeaway topic from this movie is that there's so much filler.
So much filler.
So this story is, like, let me tell you what the story is. The story is about a man who finds out that his mom has a stroke.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't have to go home right away, but he wants to. And so he decides to hitchhike because his car is not available. And he gets basically picked up by a ghost who tells him that before they get to the hospital, he has to decide if it's his mom or him that dies.
Mm-hmm.
That's the story. Like, that's...
This is the short story.
Yeah. I mean, this is, like, it's a novella. It's a bit longer than a short story, but, like, that's your arc, basically. And it probably would have made for, like, a solid hour-long TV with commercials.
Mm-hmm. Like, a solid 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they have to pull a movie out of this. And so, like, what I can definitely tell you is that, because I haven't read the whole novella, but none of that nonsense about him being, like, an artist and having go to John Lennon and, like, go get his girlfriend breaking up with him, like, none of that's in the book.
Mm-hmm.
That's all made up.
It also feels like none of that's in the book.
It also
feels... It doesn't feel that relevant to the story we're telling.
Well, it feels completely pointless. I mean,
mm-hmm.
the stuff with the girlfriend is not... I mean, it's barely in there, and it adds nothing to the story, really.
Like, when you tell me that the book, the short story, opens with him hitchhiking...
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It opens
that's really,
with a phone call.
Right.
It opens with, like,
that's
oh, your mom's had a stroke.
Pretty much when the movie starts to kick in.
Why?
It's been, like, 20 minutes of running back and forth.
Why wouldn't the movie just decide to start the...
Because
I mean,
it needs filler.
You don't have anything else
yeah.
to do in that. You need more.
I think there's not a... There's probably a good instinct to say that you want to find out more about his backstory, perhaps,
mm-hmm.
going into this. That's fine.
But they don't
I don't
yeah.
think you find out anything
if you,
relevant.
If
though.
You actually clock, like, when fucking David Arquette finally is like, it's your mom
or
you.
We're well
yeah.
into the third
That's
act.
Like...
It's 54, it's like 54 minutes into the movie.
yeah.
He pops up, like, once or twice prior that just very briefly you see him, like,
mm-hmm.
in a crowd. But before he actually meets Alan and before Alan gets into the car, it's been 54
yeah.
fucking minutes.
So the old man is in the book as well.
Mm-hmm.
I know that. The book has the old guy that he gets in the car with first. And
mm-hmm.
he's like, I shouldn't... He gets creeped out by him pretty rightly. So, I mean, it's like... It's one of those things that I think is really interesting. Like, choice and it's an authentic thing is that, like, there's probably nothing wrong with that guy. But, like, it's... Maybe it's a little ageist, but, like, it is, like, a weird, creepy old
it's,
guy.
It's like it's late, right? It's late,
yeah.
it's creepy, you're alone, you're in a
he's
car together.
He's sad
yeah.
and old and lonely, and he's, like, grabbing his crotch weirdly.
Yeah,
because
he's
like,
a truss.
His car smells like piss.
Yeah.
I think there was, like, a possibility where it could have all been very mundane, but I think it is, like, it's alone, you're out on this road at night, you don't have anyone around that you can, like, call upon for help.
Yeah.
And then this weird shit starts to happen. I can see how that could get
right.
out.
And I mean, he keeps talking about, like, his loved one, like, his wife who's
yeah.
dead.
Yeah, oh, my wife
and
died.
And he keeps swerving out of
yeah.
his lane, which also, that would really freak me
oh,
out.
Oh, yeah,
right?
No, that would be enough for me, frankly.
Yeah.
So, like, that's pretty much, like, the only other
is
episode in the book.
The hippie in the book?
I don't think he is.
Okay.
Oh, my God, what?
The fake hippie.
I mean, I guess we can get into that, but what was the point of the hippie?
I guess it was just, like, again, more filler.
Yeah.
Like you need minutes to fill.
Because that
yeah.
was maybe, what, like a 3-minute sequence?
I guess it was just another... I mean, if you were adapting this book and all you had was, like, he gets to the car with the old guy, then he gets out of the car with the old guy, then he gets in the car with the ghost,
mm-hmm.
you're like, I guess we'll add another guy and
right.
we'll make him, like, we'll stage the levels of creep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So the first guy is, like, not bad. He is, like, an irresponsible driver, but, like, he's, like... acting like he's, like, a woke hippie, basically.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, really, he's, like, an ex-vet.
He's a deserter.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's, like, a deserter. Like, maybe he got discharged, maybe he's hiding in
Which
the
Which I guess
US.
Is why he's wearing the wig.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he's pretending like he went to Woodstock and shit.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like maybe the car crash that he gets into is a little too much too soon.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's because it's a bad accident. His head
yeah.
whacks the windshield. The glass breaks, right?
Yeah.
Like, there's spider webbing of the glass. You see him bleeding.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, oh, man,
what
a trip.
Right.
It's like, this is dangerous.
Well,
like,
and then he just wanders out of the car, no prob. And the only time I think we see that come back is when... Later when Barbara Hershey, like, touches his head and, like, oh, there's blood in your hair. He's like, no bag.
But I thought that was from when he whacked his head on the
Yeah, that wasn't
stone.
From... He didn't suffer in the first
yeah.
accident. The hippie
oh,
was bleeding.
Okay.
Yeah. Which, again, makes it doubly weirder. I don't blame him for getting out of the car at that point.
Right.
I feel like if you've been on a ride with a guy who's not driving very well, you find out he's lied to you about who he is. Like, I'd probably just be like, you know what? Fuck you. Clean up your own messes.
It also sort of has the energy of, like, is this fake hippie just gonna kill him or something?
It's weird.
It feels weirder than it actually is.
Which is maybe something.
And it's still daytime when that happens too.
Yeah, it is. It's not that creepy. It's just weird.
That is something I think the movie does well, though, is just kind of have a general feeling of weird going on.
Yeah. So there's, I gotta say, like, the parts for me that work when you have to take this, and the reason why, pretty much the reason why I picked this movie is in between, like, he gets in the car with the guy, and then night falls, and in between, like, the old guy and the ghost, and between the hippie and the old guy, there's just a lot of scenes, again, because this fucking movie's gotta be hitting the 90-minute mark,
mm-hmm.
of just him at night walking
mm-hmm.
on all of these, like, main, you know, like, woodsy, in the middle of nowhere
right,
roads.
There's, like, streetlights, yeah. but it's the woods, and no one's
yeah,
there.
Yeah, it's, like, raining, or it has just rained,
yeah.
and, like, it's just him alone and like a bunch of sort of random creepy episodes happening.
Yeah, like there's like a crow eating
yeah.
roadkill and then gets hit by an ambulance.
Well, and he's stoned, right? And he imagines the crow being like, what the fuck are you
yeah.
looking
yeah, he's stoned. He wipes out his blunt in the street after that. Like,
yeah.
But there's also...
he does like the cartoon thing where you look at the bottle of wine and pour
yeah.
it on the ground.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh,
I've had enough of this.
Yeah.
And then there's kind of an echo of that scene with the rabbit and the...
Yeah,
dog.
He like he's hearing like howling, and then he like hears rustling in a bush, and then he's like, "Oh shit!" And then a rabbit comes out, and he's like, "Ugh!" And then a wolf comes out, and or a dog, and snatches the rabbit. And he's like, "Ah!"
And
then
and
then the dog gets hit by a fucking truck.
Well, the dog attacks him in his like
fantasy.
Yeah.
There's a movie. This movie loves like
gotcha fantasy
gonna
moments.
We're gonna talk about how Chris.
I did. Okay.
So this movie happens nonstop in the movie.
That's right.
But at the very end of the movie, after like a bajillion of these fakeouts, Kareem got taken in twice rapid fire.
Really hard.
Because the movie does like three fakeouts in a row.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Until you
well,
get the real thing.
I do think it's especially absurd that I guess on some level I really had not learned the lesson because we had been through plenty of these fakeouts and I didn't get so affected. But then he gets to the hospital, and there's two fakeouts in a row, right?
Yeah.
Of the, oh, you're visiting her, let me call this doctor. And then the doctor starts to give this very grim prognosis as they're, like, walking
He says
down the
he's dead. First, he
first
says, the mother's
she's
dead.
Dead. And
yeah,
like,
and then you're like,
oh.
And Chris was like, and then we fake out to realize that, oh, no, the girl at the desk is still calling the doctor. Another doctor shows up, and he says, your mother's a vegetable. And Chris goes, again. Then
believe,
reveal that, no, this
time.
Also has not happened.
I believe
yeah.
the second time I go, oh, God.
Yeah.
After the third fake out, like, he sees the ghost of George Staub going after his mom, and Chris
yeah.
is again like, oh no!
I. Yeah.
Do you know what else does this? The game Eternal Darkness for GameCube.
Yeah. It sure
used
does.
To, like, when you used to, like, that had a game famously had a sanity meter, and when your sanity was low, you would, like, walk into a room and your body would fall apart, and then it would, like bop, and then you're back out the room again, you're like, what the fuck?
Or it would do fake outs, like, it would be, like, a sudden game over, or it would
yeah,
do, like,
it would be like,
glitch.
Oh, your memory card is corrupted, you lost your save file, and then it would, like, a few seconds would pass by, and then it would flash, and you'd be back in the room, and you're like, what the fuck? And that's kind of what, like, it... You know, not a... Eternal Darkness was cutesy in that way and kind of cool, but, like, the movie is like, come on, movie.
No, I
like,
find it frustrating because,
around.
Like, after you've seen this happen twice or so, you're like, okay, I get it now. Every
yeah.
time you see something weird, he's gonna die, something's gonna attack him, he's gonna hear some bad news, and then we'll be reset, and
yeah.
you'll reveal that it's really not that bad. This happens so fucking often.
I don't hate the idea of having a main character who's very imaginative and is kind of having these little reveries in between
them. Yeah, but Legion, it is not.
Yeah.
In terms of affecting, playing
not
with
at
reality.
All.
Yeah.
But I wish it... I mean, I don't hate the idea. I just think the execution sucks. And I also think the way that they... Not all of them, but the way I found that they...
Burn.
Oh my God.
George!
David Arquette! the way that they did... great deal of them was, like, weirdly comedic in a way that did not fit with the rest
yeah,
of the movie.
Yeah, there are a lot of times where it's... So, there's one in particular I remember that he imagines going into his mother's hospital room. He sees his mother lying there in the bed, and she looks okay, and then she looks up at him and goes, like a parrot,
yeah.
and the doctor is like, your mother's brain damaged. You're gonna have to take care of her for the rest of your life. That means no school, no friends, no semblance of real life. And it's like, this is something you would actually be concerned about if you found out your mom had had a stroke. Like, maybe I do need to put my entire life on hold to take care of her, but the movie plays it as like a joke where his mom is sitting there going, as he's like looking at her. Like, this is a genuinely upsetting thing
yeah.
that you could have it be played for actual like fear, but it's played as a joke.
Yeah.
I feel like you could still have her squawking like a parrot and have it be scary.
I guess you could too, but the movie seems to like like she's smiling.
It doesn't know how to do that.
Right.
Scene.
It's portrayed in such a broad comedic sense that you can't look at it as any other way. But
I agree.
That.
It's well,
it could be like nightmarish and absurd, but still not pleasant.
Yeah.
It does it, and we get those broad comedic takes, I think, too many times. And I think ultimately the movie is not does not want to be a comedy, so I don't understand why that's in there. And it doesn't really serve to make the serious parts.
Excuse me.
Bless you.
It doesn't really serve to make the serious parts more serious. It just sticks out, and I feel like my time's being wasted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The movie strikes a weird tone, too. I don't know. It's the 60s, but it loves to use, like, death metal riffs.
Oh, the music.
Well.
I think there's a little bit. Let me just, like, check up on filler. We've talked about the girlfriend arc. That's bizarre.
Okay, so here's
that,
the other,
actually,
yeah.
in further detail.
So can I throw up the biggest issue I have with the girlfriend arc also, aside from, like, the girlfriend is, like, an unredeemably unlikable character.
And it's barely an arc.
Yeah. So what we find out, in the beginning, she's breaking up with him in an art class. Mm-hmm. He walks away, he's like, so you're breaking up with me? She's like, oh, she, like, doesn't say, like, yes, I'm breaking up with you, but she gives, like, one of those non-committal, like,
she's like, oh, you're so obsessed with death.
Right, yeah.
Why are you showing up on this?
So then we cut to him in the bathtub playing with a razor. He accidentally cuts his wrist because his roommates and his girlfriend and a bunch of other friends barge into the fucking bathroom where he's taking a goddamn bath, naked, I might add, with a birthday cake. And they're like, surprise birthday. He's fucking taking a bath in the bathtub.
Yeah.
What are you doing? Then, so like, he accidentally slits his wrist in that scene. He wakes up in the hospital. And she's like, that was a fucking dumb thing to do, you selfish bitch. So
let's talk about all the other dumb things. I'm just saying, like, what about the dumb things before that? Like, breaking up with him, supposedly?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, no,
wait,
exactly.
By the way,
busting into
why was
bathroom?
That a necessary part of this surprise party plan?
Right, no, because she says something like, I only pretended to break up with you for your surprise party. And you're like, what? And then she does reveal later on that she was, I guess, going to break up with him.
Yeah.
But like, what a bizarre journey to get from point A to point C, and you're meandering all through the rest of the alphabet before you double back to
but
C.
We go from A to B to C, but then we go from C back to B, because she's like, actually, I was breaking up with you. That,
right.
That really was a thing.
We can get into it when we talk about the character arc, which I think I want to get into next, but I think all of this really serves to do is try to establish Alan as somebody who's obsessed with death.
But we don't really
in a way that they don't really
necessarily
know how to. Yeah, they don't know how to tell that story.
Yeah, they don't.
Also, his friends are idiots. Like, he's surrounded
by his
fools.
Yeah, his two dumbass friends. Also, it should be said, the issue that I had when I was watching this is, so he has tickets to see John Lennon and the Plastic Ono Band.
Mm-hmm.
He has these tickets that his girlfriend gave to him before she kind of, I guess, broke up with him.
Mm-hmm.
Two of them. He's going to take one of his roommates to Toronto with him so they can go see this. Then he finds out his mom has a stroke and he gives the tickets to his two roommates who drive away. Instead of saying, have two tickets to go see this, but first, can you drop me off back home where my mom has had a fucking stroke?
Yep.
I looked it up online, actually. It is less than a 2-hour drive from where his university is to where his hometown is. It's just, I think, the fact that he's hitchhiking so much that really draws it out over the night.
That's annoying!
Yeah.
Which, by the way, it feels like it's a loop that doesn't need to be opened. Do you know what I mean? Of like, there would have been another way to necessitate him hitchhiking.
Right.
Yeah.
Lee says that in the novella, his car is in the shop.
He has a car, but it's in the shop, so he can't drive.
And the novella obviously does not have the problem of his two dumbass roommates.
No.
So like, he might not have anyone to ask for.
It does establish that he lives with two other guys,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't go into the details of who those guys are.
And I guess, in an effort to stretch the story out, they just, like, created more problems for the story that just didn't need to be there.
Yeah. And I know that hitchhiking is a thing that people did in the 60s. Like, it was a thing you would do. It wasn't looked upon as dangerous or strange, and you would get you from point A to point B, like, relatively quickly, because people would just pick you up. Looking on it through the lens of whenever the fuck this came out, 2004, I kind of just want more answers as to why he didn't find another way to get there.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't...
I don't know what we've been to this for, but it's still set in the 60s.
Oh, yeah, no, I know it is. But, like, I'm just saying through a modern lens, like, I feel like even if you just said, like, oh...
Well, he's at college.
Yeah.
I mean, I just need a line about, like, I can't afford a train ticket.
Yeah, that's fine.
Or just, like, through the modern... Just why not just use the movie's excuse? You don't need the tickets to the concert. That complicates things.
Yeah.
You can have him break up with his girlfriend without doing this back and, okay, I am, but I'm not, but I actually am bullshit. Like, it's so many little cul-de-sacs we keep hitting.
There are a lot of those.
And it really is just cul-de-sacs all the way down from beginning to end. And it's a very frustrating structure.
Yeah, a lot of it is weirdly episodic.
Yeah.
Which I think could have worked for this. A road trip movie could work as an...
I don't mind it once he starts hitchhiking. I mind it when it's in the first 25 minutes.
Yeah. Well, you said something while we were watching, and the movie does get good once night falls.
It does.
And then,
yeah.
I was like, this is when I start to like this movie. Like, here's all the good stuff.
Yeah, unfortunately, you have to wait for like 25 minutes for that.
And then there's still the rest of the movie to
go. I had forgotten how slow this movie actually
is. Yeah, it
does
feel slow. It's short, but it feels long.
Yeah, it's such a slow to start movie.
Yeah. So let's get from the how much filler there is to talk about what is the general arc of the movie and of Alan's character is.
Right. First of all, can we define Alan as a character?
He's obsessed with death.
Yeah.
What else we got?
He's a college student.
He's a college student.
It's just his mom and him. His dad died when he was younger.
Him and his mom against the
world. He has a flighty girlfriend and two idiot roommates.
He...
What about him as a person, though?
Has a dad that committed suicide.
Yeah.
So wait, I don't know why I was saying...
Did his dad really commit suicide?
I don't know. I think it's unclear, and I think that could have been interesting, but I think there's something to be said about if this is all in his head.
Yeah.
That, like, it's just his own paranoia that he's always suspected that it wasn't a car crash, it was that his dad committed suicide, and that's why he wants to kill himself.
Uh-huh.
I think there's something, they don't talk about it, they don't go into it, but I think they could have, and it would have been really interesting.
Yeah.
I also wonder, so here's my take on it. I think whether or not the dad committed suicide is kind of an open question we don't necessarily get an answer to, but in my opinion, we know for a fact he did not kill himself the way that David Arquette tells him he did.
Why?
Do we know that?
Well, because his telling of that story is that he shoots himself, puts the gun in his mouth, like, in a room in their house.
No, I thought it was, like, an office
or
something.
Office.
Like, his office.
Really?
I assumed it was, like, the
dad's
office.
It looks like it was just, like, the study at home or something.
I assumed it was his dad's office.
Oh, weird. Okay, so I assumed it was home, and I thought, okay, well, no way is that true, because that would have, like, he would have seen some evidence of that having happened before walking upstairs and seeing mom
crying. There's no, they don't tell you that it is, so you can't say that it is. You can't.
True.
Yeah. My assumption was that it was not, though.
I thought it was an office.
Yeah.
What do you guys think? Do you think he committed suicide?
I don't know, but I don't think it matters. I think it's a good story. I think it's a good arc to have that he is afraid that this is where his suicidal thoughts are coming from, or that he's inherited. Like, there's something to be said for there.
Yeah, I think had the movie
like,
set
like, I had this father with mental illness. Like, maybe that's
right.
why. Maybe that's why. I feel if it's not, like...
That would have
what
been
is
a
it?
Fascinating road to go down.
Yeah, and see, had the movie decided to deal with that, it could have been one thing.
But
as it stands in the movie, it's sort of just an unanswered question. Like, I expect a scene where he talks to Barbara Hershey after she gets out of the hospital. It's like, so, like, what really happened with Dad? But
it
doesn't.
And we as viewers don't even necessarily need that answer, but
I
need to know that conversation.
We don't,
and
but
he
it,
never
it,
even talks it, about it with his mom after
right,
that.
No, it feels like it's something important for him to know, even if I myself never find out. Like, I feel like I want to know that the character knows.
But in any case, like, he starts out the movie as, like, a sort of, like, proto-god. Like, obsessed with death,
so,
painting metal covers.
He's infuriating, I have to say. Like, in the opening of this movie... Like,
no,
like
he's
not.
He's an asshole.
Yeah, no, you see him in art class, and everyone's sketching a naked woman. He's, like, drawing a naked corpse woman with, like, a ghost behind... like, standing behind it. And the art teacher is, like Matt Frewer, like, a very stereotypical sort of, like, like, oh, why can't you just paint life as it is? Life is beautiful.
Yeah,
and it's
60s,
just
Age of Aquarius.
Yes, exactly. And it's just, like, such... It's, like, this tedious high school bullshit. You know, like, we all knew people like this in high school who were, like, drawing skulls everywhere and be like, but death, man, like,
well,
it's coming for us all.
We know these guys.
Oh, yes,
too.
We do.
Clearly impressed with his own morbidity and, like, fascination with darkness.
Right.
But it comes across as just, like... Well, I think our modern version of that is sort of like the tween that never really grew out of that phase.
Mm-hmm.
And like they carried it. Or it was also giving me, it's sort of like third-rate version of John Cusack in Better Off Dead.
Yeah.
Of like...
Yeah,
this,
but
this...
that's like fun.
Right, but that's what I'm saying. It's third-rate. It's
yeah.
just sort of like, in John Cusack's character in that, you know that his character in that has this sort of like immature gothiness to him, but it's... done well enough that it's entertaining. In this, it just comes off as really annoying with really no redeeming factor.
It just feels like something you should have grown out of by this point, you know?
Yeah.
Like, this is something that's acceptable when you're 16. When you're, like, 21 or something, it's a little like, okay, hon, like, reel it up.
Yeah.
So, I think it's pretty easy to grok what the arc should have been in this movie. When I think it, what they were trying to do, and this is, by the way, not, I think, reflective of the novel, the novella. I think the novel is pretty much more straightforward. But in the movie, what I think they're trying to establish is this is a guy that is preoccupied with death and afraid of it too much. And he undergoes this journey where he finds out his mom is maybe dying, except she's not really, like, he's told from the get-go, like, she's fine.
Yeah.
She's not
just,
dead.
Just, yeah, come up as soon as
she
can.
She's not uncritical, but he's like, no, I have to go now. And it's him all, like, making it up, like, oh my gosh, his mom's gonna die, and this is the last time I'm gonna see her. So I think it, again, is feeding into this, like, he's afraid of death. And they bring up riding the bullet as an analogy of, like, you know, he couldn't do it. He got up there, and it was like, he thought
choked.
He was gonna die, choked. And he gets into this car with his ghost who tells him, like, you know, you have to pick your mom or you. Any at some point, like, they even have him go to the park, which is not in the summary, but it right. should have made it.
Yeah.
He's running away from the ghost, and he ends up in Thrill Park, whatever.
Thrill Village.
Yeah. With the riding the bullet ride.
Yeah, and he gets in the car.
And
yeah.
like there, he has this like horrific time where he sees like all of the dead ghouls of his life.
Yeah, his
like,
dead dad, yeah. his mom who he thinks is dead, his friends who announced that
yeah,
they have died.
Yeah, but he rides it like he's screaming, but then he has this like it sort of stops, and then he's like. It just look like, oh, it's over.
Yeah.
And there's like, that's like, that should have been the moment where he's like, oh, it actually wasn't that bad.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like, it comes to an end and it's fine.
Yeah.
And I think that that's what was supposed to be this arc of him realizing, like, you know, it's not that bad, it's part of life, blah, blah, blah.
So I agree with you because I do think the movie wants you to think that that's an important moment. And I think that there is a version of the movie where it could be an important moment.
Yeah.
The problem that I have is after the fact, after he goes on that, which the movie wants you to think is a big deal, he then says, take my mom.
Yeah.
yeah.
Like, it bugs me. Like, if he's faced death, slash the bullet, and he's, like, come out on the other side, I feel like it would make more sense for him to be like, take me instead. Like,
yeah.
I've already seen this. I know what's happening. I've been talking to you. Like, fucking take me. Because
it also carries through the meaning of that symbol into the story, which at this point, it's just sort of like, well, that's done with. Now back to, as we were.
Yeah, yeah, no, and reset all this. Forget that you ever went on the bullet.
Right!
However, like, I don't know. Like, I think it goes back to the novella being different from the movie, because I think the point of the novella is, like, I think the novella's trying to think about guilt, because the novella doesn't have a lot of that baggage, and instead just has, like, you have to make this choice,
right.
and he chooses his mom in a
right.
moment of panic and fear,
right.
Which is sort of like an instinctual, like, well, my mom's, like, older,
yeah.
and I'm younger, blah, 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 like, and so he chooses his mom, and, I think that they're implying this in both versions, but they do it better in the book. That, like, he goes, after he says his mom, he's ejected from this horrid nightmare, he goes back to the hospital, his mom's fine, and then his mom recovers, and then lives, like, a couple more years,
yeah.
and then she dies.
Right.
And in the book, they make a big deal out of the fact that after he wakes up from this nightmare, he has a thrill of
the Thrill Village button.
Yeah, like, button, which he didn't have before, and so it's kind of a sign, like, oh, maybe that was real.
Yeah.
And one day he loses the button, and that's when his mom dies.
Right.
And so, like, for the rest of his life, he's kind of like, oh, did my choice damn my mom?
Right, that. And he has, like, the button as, like, symbolic of that, almost.
Yeah.
Like, so he has it there as a constant reminder.
Quite interesting.
And they actually have him say the exact same thing in the movie, where he, like, he says he'll never forget and always regret his choice
right.
that he made. But they don't have the button thing.
Yeah.
So it's a bit less clear, but so it's trying to have it both ways in the movie, because I think the movie wants to have him say that he's no longer afraid of death, but also there's still that layer of guilt that's
right, of like cowardice, because he basically sold out his mom.
Yeah.
So, like, you can't have it both ways, movie.
Well,
yeah.
And it's sort of fuzzy, too, because doesn't the ghost mention to him, like, well, your mom smokes like a chimney and, like, drinks a ton.
She has diabetes, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I think you could have actually done it. I mean, you maybe could have had it both ways if you had him have a vision of his mom saying, like, it's fine.
Right.
Yeah.
Take, like,
right.
have me die or whatever.
Yeah.
And even if that was the ghost tricking him when he made the choice, like, I think you could have maybe got away with it. But it's still a question of why, other than the fact that you need to make this movie
longer.
Like 15 minutes longer than it needed to be.
Because then it's unfortunate, because it really does reduce the whole riding the bullet legitimate sequence as another cul-de-sac.
Yep.
Because he approaches what he thinks is his mom, and it's actually David Arquette, and the skin is off the hand and all that other shit.
Yeah, he kicks him back in the car, and he's like, now make the choice!
Yeah.
He's like,
yeah.
Okay, I choose my mom.
And it's just, it's a bummer.
Yeah.
I also think there is a way that Alan could have been portrayed as being both obsessed with death and also afraid of death, but the movie doesn't really analyze this in any way.
Yeah.
We barely get we get sort of the obsession with death. It all feels very surface level.
Yeah.
We never drill down into something with him, and it's unfortunate, because I actually think it's a really fascinating idea. I think there's a lot of different directions you could have taken that. I think you could have even explained this sort of, like, panic and freak out, just the idea of your mom's had a stroke, but it's okay, you can come over the weekend. I never felt like it was established for me in the movie that he's like, well, I lost my father, I don't want to lose my mom too, it's, you know, me and her against the world, and that's what's kind of driving me back to that. It's not, I mean, I kind of made that connection in my head eventually, but I wish that that was more explicit in the movie, because it's, I don't know, it's just so much unfulfilled potential in this
concept.
There
are definitely connections you can infer, but the movie does not at all try and spell them out.
No.
Like, not in a way that I think is supposed to be vague, but just in a way that doesn't really know what story it's telling.
I mean, it doesn't feel like it's open-ended for us. It just feels like they didn't think of it.
Right.
No, it's not. All right, so I want to not, without fully leaving character arc, we can start to get into acting, but what I wanted to first get into with the acting and staying someone in the character arc is I wanted to mention, as no one else, including somebody, has talked about before, which is that Jonathan Jackson, there's like a second Jonathan Jackson that periodically walks into frame and he like talks to him or like sometimes it's one-sided, sometimes it's two-sided. It's very bizarre, and they don't say, they don't tell you like, is this like his id? Is it like, is it just him talking to himself? Is it a specific part of his personality?
Yeah, it's all, it's just like his thoughts, I think.
It's like his thoughts, because it's like, it's never like, it's not like the other self that you see is consistent.
Right.
It's just like, is there to be a bouncing...
It's a sounding board. Well, sounding board. Yeah. Who's just saying, sometimes, like, reaffirming what he thinks, and sometimes giving him sometimes the opposite.
Arguing, but sometimes it might exist as a separate entity in that world to some degree, because David Arquette...
Well, David Arquette's also probably part of his imagination.
Yeah, you could also make that argument, too, that, like, so, because when David Arquette says, like, hey, who are you anyway? Like,
which I love that moment, too, by the way. Yeah. It's one of the moments I like.
It's good.
But I really like the mechanic of that. Like, that's something I would almost want to play with more, because I like a lot of those scenes.
He's more bearable as the id self than he is as the...
I would agree. I kind of like that the one... I think it's supposed to be, like, you know, the unrestrained inner self to some extent, because it's always typically saying things that, like, you wouldn't want to say out loud, or that your parts of you that, like, you know, but you don't want to admit to yourself.
Yeah. It's also a lot more, like, self-critical. I never felt like Alan the person really stopped to consider these things about himself, but the id one is always just, like, get over yourself, like...
Yeah.
You're being really dumb.
Yeah, like, he in the hospital, he there's, like, another hospital version of him that walks up and is like, you're being a drama queen.
Yeah.
Like, you're being an asshole. You're whining.
Right. But there are also points where, like, when he's at the gravestone, the other Alan is saying, mom's dead. Mom's dead.
Yeah, like,
and he's like,
oh,
no, she's not dead. Like, I just misread the thing on the gravestone. Like, it's fine. He's like, no, she's dead. She's dead.
Yeah. And, like, he's the one... pushing, I guess it is like, maybe it is like a deeper, I don't know, I'm drawing too many
references. Is it his like self-loathing and anxiety?
I think it's just there to like provide an opposing voice for him when he needs it, you know?
Yeah, because in the first car with the old guy saying like, this old guy is fucking, he's
weird. Yeah, something's
weird
here.
He's weird, what's wrong with him? And like, maybe there was something wrong with him, but you'll never know because he left that car. And then the second time, he's also like, oh my god, it's the ghost!
Yeah.
Don't give him any information.
The ghost. Yeah, which I like the decision a lot. I think it actually makes Alan a bit more likable.
Yes.
And, I don't know, I kind of want there to be more of a sense of what is happening. Like, I guess in the movie it is just a sounding board, but like, is it weird to want to know what it is? Like, who is this other self? Like... I don't know.
No, I think I would be fine knowing a little bit more about what Alan thinks this other Alan's purpose is.
Yeah.
He acts as if it's not new when it first pops up.
No, and I'm sure it's not. Like, I'm sure this isn't supposed to be like, hey, where did you come from yourself? But like, so like, I'm sure, like, that's why I expect it to be like just a dramatization of what's going on in his head rather than, you know, something esoteric.
Yeah.
But I do think that there should be a little more attention paid to it. I think it's a sort of interesting narrative choice to do.
Mm-hmm.
And the movie... like, it commits to it, but doesn't really want to explore
it. I kind of wish he was just out... I don't know, maybe I would just kind of want two of them walking at night in a lot of the scenes. Like, he doesn't have to talk all the time, but, like, it'd be, like, especially with the idea of, like, maybe this is how you cope with being alone at night, is that you just imagine that you're not alone.
Yeah.
Or I would be interested to see the same older id with him in the older Alan scenes. Because that could also be like, well, after all of this shit happened, my id person now kind of has a different presence in my life, and now I'm living fucking alone in this cabin just painting things sometimes.
I need a
company.
Going to an amusement park myself, riding the boat.
That was such a bummer of an ending of life. And now the old man goes to Thrill Village all the time.
I mean, like, he must have friends, I guess, but
I would
never know.
He doesn't mention them.
Yeah, he's very alone in his older self.
My kingdom for a scene where, like, someone is bringing him, like, jam and bread. You know what I mean?
Casserole,
like,
anything.
Yeah.
Like,
Barbara Hershey, I thought, was a very convincing, lovable mom, but also realistic.
Question.
I liked her.
About her.
Yes, answer.
Was she an alcoholic?
Like, in the movie?
Yes.
They only have her that one... They only show her that one time.
I never
took
her to be an alcoholic.
Yeah, there's a lot of vignettes of... Just to give some background, because I don't think they say this in the movie, or in what we've talked about, but, like, there are a lot of random scenes of, like, different stages of Alan's childhood with his mom. And then most of them are, like, fairly happy. There's, like, oh, he comes home and, like, there's, like, a government official there.
Yeah.
It's, like, there for, like, whether or not she gets more money. And she's, like, what an asshole, right?
More money from
the government.
Yeah,
for, like,
well, I don't know what it, she
I
says. What
it was?
Is. Yeah,
having a dead husband, I guess.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Awful damn crop heads.
Yeah, that's right.
But yeah, and you know, talking about, like, oh, Jonas against the world. There's two kind of fraught ones. One of them is where he goes home as a very small child, and his mom's sobbing uncontrollably because the dad just died.
Right.
And the other one is, like, I think it's similar, like, on the same night or on a similar night, like, because it's the same age of the older one.
Yeah.
Where he comes home and she's just passed out on the floor.
Right. Well, it's like a fake out almost a little bit, because you see her lying on the floor,
yeah,
and you're like, oh, no, what's happened? And he turns her over and she's sort of like, like,
yeah,
so, like, the implication is that
she's
just
drunk.
Yeah.
That's what, yeah.
I
don't think that she's an alcoholic. I thought it was just she was coping with her husband dying.
Yeah.
And, like, he, you know, it's also probably one of those things as a child that you might not necessarily want to see, so it probably affected him in some way.
Right.
But I don't
think
there's an implication that she's been
drinking. Okay. I couldn't tell if that was supposed to be, like, symptomatic of a larger thing.
No, she is also described as being, like, unhealthy. Like,
right,
she's
diabetic, and
she
smokes a lot. I think they would have said, like, also she drinks, you know, like,
that's
like,
true.
You know, she's got 8 glasses
yeah
of whiskey in her system by 12 o'clock at night.
I think,
like,
that, you know, she's just generally depicted as, like, a very grounded, like, realistic.
Mm-hmm.
She's got a lot of flaws, but she's like,
she does good work.
Good, yeah, she was a good mother. And I think it was just meant to be, like, you know, one of the not so rosy nights. I think there's something to be said for, like, when your mom's in the hospital, you're probably remembering a lot of, like, the bad times.
Yeah.
Or, like, mm-hmm, the, like, not, like, bad when she was, like, unpleasant, but, like, when...
Scary things.
Oh, my
things.
God, yeah,
yeah,
like, scary things that you... Scary memories of your mom.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that her performance is pretty good.
Yeah,
in all of
I think
flashbacks.
She does her job.
Yeah. How about our cat?
I like him. All right, I think he's camping it up, and I love it. You know what?
He is.
It's a big...
The movie may not have wanted camp, but he was probably asked.
See,
I think
the movie wanted camp. I don't think the movie should have asked for camp.
Yeah,
but I think it wanted it, and David Arquette delivered it.
I think the only bit where the camp worked, or at least I'll say worked best...
Is the flashback, the movie?
The movie flashback.
Yeah,
so,
you do, like, this fake 60s movie.
I like that in theory. I don't know if I like it in that point.
Well,
me neither.
It also felt, as many points did feel, like I was getting the thing they were going for, and I liked the thing they were going for, but we landed, like, halfway there.
Yeah.
So, like, there were things about that sequence that I was like, that was cute and fun, but it felt very clumsy the way it was all put together.
Yeah.
I think if it had happened in the cemetery when he first sees the gravestone and
makes
has this
so
immediate vision
sense
of, like, this must have been what happened to him,
mm,
then, like, it would have been fine. Because then you even end with him being like, and every year
how
on this night,
yeah,
yeah, I drive along the road looking for people to pick up or some shit like that. So, like, you would already show that he sort of has this preoccupied fear that this might happen to him.
It would
yeah
also make sense that it's like, oh, this is an urban legend.
Yeah, it would
somewhere
be cool to establish that earlier,
yeah,
I think. It is hilarious. Been good. I don't know, I really appreciate him just chewing the fuck out of that scenery.
He really does.
Car.
He's very watchable. I think he's the most
yeah
watchable.
He's so, like,
movie
menacing and sinister as soon as he gets in the car with him and he's like, what'd you say your name was? Hector?
Yeah. Bet
oh,
you got made
Hector
fun of for that
did
name.
Made fun
yeah
of in school
oh
for that
Hector
name.
Oh, it's Hector, is it?
You said funeral, huh? I thought you said wedding.
Yeah.
I believe you always say what you mean to say. Me and
he's
Freud.
He's just, like, biting off all of his words. Like, it's really intense.
Yeah,
yeah.
He puts himself into it. Old creepy man.
That guy was creepy.
Yeah, he's fine.
Yeah.
It's it's Uncle Ben from Spider-Man.
Yeah,
I'm blanking
Ben
on his name.
Damn Truss.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Tobey Maguire. Yeah, Cliff Robertson?
Yeah.
Yes, that's
yeah,
the
Tobey Maguire Spider-Man. It's Uncle Ben. Like, he's good.
He's
yeah
good.
Nice guy.
He does,
it's
he,
upsetting.
He does a solid... His eyes are like... I don't know how he does it.
Glazed
yeah
over.
They're constantly about to cry.
Well, it looks like also, like, one of them is not, like, looking in the same direction
yes
sometimes. Which maybe it was something to do with a contact lens or whatever.
I also think they lit him in a weird way where
yeah
it made his eyes look almost false
mm
in a weird way.
Yeah.
Like, very kind of washed out and mirrored.
Yep.
It was spooky.
But yeah, and everyone else is for their friend, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Erica Christensen, but, like, her characters.
We don't like none of
the
characters.
Yeah.
The two dumb
yeah, the two
dumbass
roommates.
Friends.
It's like everyone's written so horribly that I can't really accurately assess
yeah
how well they were played.
Yeah, and I mean, I think what's his face does fine with the role of Alan, but I just don't think Alan could have been an interesting character. He's just not
that,
as written.
I think that Alan. I think Jonathan Jackson did a pretty good job. I don't think. That
I think
Alan's
he did a good job with
but
what he had to work with.
Yeah.
But again, as we said, Alan's just not that interesting.
My consolation for that tragic patchy facial hair.
Yeah.
That was it
yeah
was like just
he was such
off
like
that
an
point
almost attractive man in that movie.
Yeah,
yeah
right?
Just something
so
about that face.
But
yeah
it was like something there was something too starved, too
yeah
scruffy about it that just wasn't working.
It's like it was this verging on creep.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is, yeah. He just needs like the thin, like faint
yeah
mustache
right
above his lip and he'd be there.
Ugh.
And for the movie to maybe frame him less.
He had nice hair.
He did have nice hair.
His hair was very nice. If you could fix the fix that face.
Fix that face.
Jackson.
Hey, Jackson. Fix that face.
Speaking of how Jonathan Jackson looks, let's talk about how this movie
looks like shit.
Looks like garbage.
It looks like an episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And that it is lit exactly the same way. Like,
really? I was gonna say, like, Are You Afraid of the Dark?
Oh yeah, no. Like it's looks like budget. It's like TV on a budget, right?
Yeah.
Where, like, it's not lit particularly well. It's not shot particularly well. Like, the direction isn't that good either. So it just looks like something you could turn on USA circa 2004 and be like, oh, it's a TV show.
A lot of the shots are very fuzzy too. I found, like, the silhouettes of cars moving in the street always kind of looked a little blurry.
Yeah, I guess why don't we just wrap up the last topic since I think we're gonna mix over. But it looks and it sounds like garbage.
The music.
The score is awful. Looking
awful.
The score, this is maybe the worst score I think I've ever encountered. I know some of the Hal Hartley ones are very minimalist in a way I don't always like.
Yeah.
This is just inappropriate and bad. There's so much electric guitar wailing and noodling. Like, whenever he has that fantasy of death walking in the bathroom, there's like an electric guitar sting that plays on Clarissa Explains It All whenever Sam goes into her window. It's like... Like, I get it. Death is radical.
Yeah.
Fuck. The whole look of death in this movie.
Yeah.
Twice.
Yeah, death looks like Palpatine.
Yeah, he has, like, his Emperor Palpatine digs on where he, like, got, like, the dark robe and, like, the wizened old face.
It is straight out of an episode of Goosebumps.
Yeah.
Like, it just, I cannot take it seriously. It looks so fucking goofy. And it's even goofier when he shows up on
the
bullet. On the bullet.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm here too!
Yeah.
And it's so dumb.
The most effective, like, spooky shots of this movie are where the scenery does the work for you.
Right.
Yes.
Where it's just dark, it's just Alan walking down a road.
Just him
and
being alone at night.
It's nothing
spooky.
Else.
It's lonely and spooky.
Yeah.
It's the music. When they weren't choosing period songs, the period songs I thought were fine for the most part.
Yeah.
They're on the nose, you were saying.
Yes.
They are a little, like, it's all sort of like, oh, this movie's in 1969. What are the top 10 songs of 1969?
Yeah.
Right. Let's throw
them all in here. Yeah. It's the time.
I like that song, and this is extremely literal. That's a very kind of, like, one-to-one kind
of like Incense and Peppermint plays whenever the hippie drives up in his VW.
It's very much like, this is the 60s, guys. Did you know?
It's like, no, they bought, like, the Time Life, like, 60s CD and was like, here's our soundtrack.
Or there's that, like, mournful kind of Moon River-y song that plays when the old man picks him up. And it's like, yes, I'm seeing all of that, but that at least, like, made a certain kind of sense, even if it was super obvious. When we get into the fucking guitars, I can't.
No, it's so bad. It's really just
distracting,
like, it detracts from the entire movie. Like, it's, I don't know what the director was thinking. I truly don't. It makes the movie feel cheaper than it already is, and it's pretty.
It's pretty.
I think at one point I described it as, like, it's like you just knew, like, his best friend, like, plays guitar sometimes.
It was like, hey, can you give me a little tune?
Yeah.
It's just, and it also, like, I know we were watching this on Vudu where it, like, will stick in
ads
which made it feel even more like TV, but truly, I'm shocked that this got a theatrical release in 2004.
I told Brendan about this movie, and I was like, yeah, it's like this made-for-TV Stephen King movie, and you were like, it got released on
I looked it up.
And I was like, what? No.
There's no possible way.
Impossible.
I can't imagine how shitty that must have looked on the big screen.
I know. I mean, it looks like made-for-TV. There's no other way to describe it. It looks and sounds like a made-for-TV movie.
TV now is infinitely more cinematic.
Well, yeah, but I mean, like, again, 2004. If you had told me this was a made-for-TV movie in 2004, I'd be like, yes, of course it was.
Yep.
Weren't there a lot of, like, Stephen King made-for-TV movies that ABC was doing?
That's
like,
why I was like, of course it was made-for-TV.
Yeah,
I thought it was like a Rose Redfall.
Yeah, yeah,
Rose
The Shining.
Red or
oh,
The Shining.
Yeah.
Or what was the other one they did? They did a version of Carrie, too, which was so garbage.
Right.
With Patricia Clarkson.
I've never seen it.
It's very bad.
I believe it.
Guys, let's do Rose Red next year. Shit.
I'm down.
I would do it.
That's a time commitment, though, isn't it?
It's like 4 hours. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know how long.
We'll try and figure that out. I wonder if there's, like, a movie version of it that cuts out, you know,
maybe an
hour of it or something.
That's the one about the haunted house that keeps growing.
It's
the Winchester house.
The Winchester house that it's, like, sentient and it makes rooms for you.
Yeah, and it's also, like, riffing on The Haunting because Stephen King wanted to do The Haunting as a movie but, like, couldn't get the rights to it. So it was like, fine, I'll make my own haunted house story.
Question.
Answer.
Was it original for the movie or was there a book first?
There was not a book.
No, it was an original story written by Stephen King for TV.
I see. Okay.
Interesting. He didn't base it on anything. It's his own, other than, like, one.
I haven't seen it, but I am, like, aware of it and the general
idea. It's got a bunch of psychics. They take a bunch of psychics to this house, and it's good.
So he's basically, what if The Haunting took place in Winchester House?
Yeah. What if The Haunting, but by me, Stephen King? Probably, it's
You're
Maine.
Welcome. Oh, also, quick note, in one of the scenes, there's the throwaway line which establishes this as taking place in the same Stephen King verse as Castle Rock.
Well, no, like, Castle Rock is in all his books.
Yeah, Castle Rock is just...
I mean, not all of them, but, like, he mentioned, like...
There's no... The concept...
Stand By Me is set in Castle Rock.
Yeah, the concept that you're talking about doesn't really, like, it's not... That's not a thing.
Yeah.
Other than the fact that, like, Stephen King personally imagines all of his stuff to take place. Castle Rock was not conceived until, like, very recently.
I see. Okay.
Yeah. So, like, this was just, like, he often mentions, like, I think, like, there's a throwaway reference to It in another book or something like that.
The Stand, like, the Dark Towers is the one that is sort of, like...
The Avengers.
Yeah, it is, like, just the Avengers.
The crossover.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, like, the Dark Towers is what establishes for Steve. It, like, I mean, I guess he wanted to tell a fantasy, but he also uses it to establish the idea that he could link all the stories in one crazy universe.
Yeah.
But he uses, like, multiple universes in that, too. Because there's, like, the Stand universe, where, like, the people from the Dark Tower go to the Stand universe where the world's ended because of the virus. But yeah, there's not, like, what you're saying is not a real
concept. There is a connection, but it's not something that the movie threw in to
it's
be
just
cute.
That Stephen
it's probably
King
just
is
something
obsessed with Maine. He's, everything he does.
Motherfucker loves
Maine.
That motherfucking state.
I don't know if Dean Koontz has that, but Dean Koontz has golden retrievers.
They're in everything.
The Dean Koontz golden retrievers.
I mean, if you've never turned to the back page of a Dean Koontz novel and seen his about the author picture, it is with a golden retriever. And so many of his books prominently feature golden retrievers.
Wow.
There's a book about a psychic golden retriever.
Oh, you told me about that one. You told me about a bunch of Dean Koontz. I'm excited to do
Dean Koontz next month.
Yeah.
All right.
Anyway.
I think that's... I mean, I don't have anything else to say about this movie.
I don't either. It's a
worth
thin
bad.
Movie.
All right. So let's go into fixes. I don't want to go last, please. Por favor.
I can go... Because I...
First?
Oh, all right.
Do you want to go first? I'm sorry.
I was going to, and then
it.
Someone manspoke over me.
Do it.
All right.
Man
so
speak under me.
What I have, it started out as being just like some ideas, and then it turned into a full synopsis, as I do. Alan is not infatuated with death. He's terrified. Ever since his dad died when he was young, he's scared of himself or his mother dying because she's all he has. He doesn't really fit in well at art school. He doesn't have any close friends or a girlfriend or anything like that. There's someone he talks to named George Staub. We find out fairly early on he doesn't really exist and is a figment of his imagination. Like, maybe he's a character in a comic book that Alan is drawing where George is, like, everything Alan isn't. Like, he's a cool guy and he has a hot girlfriend and he drives a really great car and he's a super badass. George might have been someone he kind of turned to / created as a way of working things out mentally when Alan's dad died.
Mm-hmm.
Alan has an accidental near-death experience in sort of a way similar to the movie. Like, he might have been in the shower and his razor breaks and it nicks a vein. And while he's panicking, George shows up similar to how Darth Sidious does in the movie and, like, eggs him on a little bit. But Alan passes out before anything can happen and wakes up in a hospital where his roommates dumped him but never followed up on. He gets a call on Friday, October 31st, 1969, saying his mom had a stroke and they're not sure how she's doing. He can't get a ride home because he really doesn't know anyone well enough to ask for a ride, and there's no bus or train tickets available until Sunday, so he resolves to hitchhike. He has some weird experiences similar to what we see in the movie, albeit a little more grounded, like the hippie, the old guy, and all the antics on the road and that sort of thing. You still get him, like, with the creepy atmosphere walking down roads. But George fulfills the role of imaginary Alan, so there's not really the talking to myself stuff, just him constantly talking to George, who's always there. George gets progressively weirder and creepier as the night goes on. We still have the backstory about Alan being afraid of the bullet at Thrill Village and all that stuff that falls from that. After all this craziness, Alan cuts through a cemetery and hitches a ride. The driver is George, not a real person who looks like him, but the imaginary person Alan has been talking to all this time. Under dream logic, Alan slowly gets into the car. The two have a conversation kind of similar to one in the movie, but obviously without the whole does he know, I know he's dead thing, where Alan starts to suspect that George's appearance after his father's death was less some way of him internally making sense of the world and more of some sort of specter that's been haunting him for years. George tells him that he's been waiting for years to give Alan this option. Which of the two will die, his mother or Alan? If Alan doesn't choose, they both will. Alan manages to escape and runs to the nearby Thrill Village to hide. He almost gets away, but panics when he sees the bullet, and George captures him and forces Alan to choose. Alan panics and chooses his mom. George throws him out of the car, and he rolls in front of the hospital. At the hospital, Alan goes to see his mother but spies George making his way to her. He races to his mom's room and just manages to head off George. His mother seems fine, and the doctors say she should make a full recovery given enough time. As Alan leaves after talking to his mom, he spies George waiting outside the hospital smoking. George smiles and then disappears. Alan spends the next several years closer to his mom, partly out of guilt because he's horrified by the decision he made. He fearfully half expects something to happen to her every time he leaves the house, but nothing does. Eventually, one summer, his mom wants to take him back to Thrill Village so they can both ride the bullet, but she dies of a heart attack the morning that they're supposed to go. After her funeral, Alan goes to the bullet by himself to come to terms with his views on mortality and the responsibility he feels for choosing her. He sees a vision of his mother as he gets off the bullet and smiles at her as he leaves the park with some friends.
I like it.
Thank you.
That sounded really, really good. And a much more emotionally poignant than what we got in this
That's
movie.
What I wanted, because that's what I don't get from this movie. There is some sort of emotional catharsis that the movie thinks or wants you to have.
It at least sets it up.
Right, and I never get it. So yeah. I wanted to do a version of it where I get something at the end of it.
Okay, so I do shake things up a little bit more, I think. We start with Alan as a young child who has been kind of told the... And this is, I think, where I'm setting these events right after his father is dead for mysterious reasons, but he's, we'll say, like, however young age he was at that point, 9, 10?
Yeah, sure.
And he's heard this urban legend of this, like, local stunt driver that would just sort of, his ghost now prowls the streets around Maine and, like, looks for vulnerable souls. And in kind of, like, a fit of young grief and angst, he's just sort of out wandering these streets at night.
How old? Is he a solo kid?
9 or 10, yeah.
Okay,
Sorry. Like full sneaking out of the house, mom doesn't know.
Okay, go ahead.
And the mom's not negligent or anything, it's just like...
She sounds pretty negligent
to me,
Chris.
What can you do?
That fucking drunk.
He gets picked up by George, the crazo driver, and that's when he's pitched one of you has to die thing. And because he's a small child and he's freaking out, he says his mom... And he kind of lives with this, like, hanging over his head up into college, which is the reason why he is this sort of, like, super moribund person. And the people around him don't really get that. And he doesn't know how to explain to them, well, you remember that urban legend? I experienced it, and I made this choice. But it also makes him very intense with his relationship with his mom, because she's not dead by this point, but he's constantly feeling like the smallest thing could make it happen, based on what happened. And maybe around the time he starts to believe... Like, well, maybe that's not going to happen after all. I mean, it's been so many years. She does die of a sudden stroke. And to cope with that, kind of over this, we'll say it's like a long weekend during which the funeral takes place, he's maybe getting a little, he's leaning in on booze and drugs a little bit to help that out. And he, leaving it open to whether what elements are imagined and what elements are really occurring, he sort of goes on this emotional journey in his head / on the road of going from school and back to home for the funeral kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he decides, I think by the end of it, I want him to decide to stop off at the roller coaster to try to kind of like reclaim that moment he had with his mom. And I'd like the emotional catharsis to be writing it with her of like, we're doing this together. This was a thing I wanted to do in life, but we're not able to. But I think on the way there, I would shake up some more of the episodes. Like, I would want there to be more of a thing of, like, okay, here's the section where he's, like, stopped at this motel in this creepo, kind of, like, creepy place, and everyone's actually, maybe an undead Vietnam vet or something, and it's called Potter's Field, because that's what they call graveyards where they would stick unnamed soldiers. And maybe there would be a portion of sort of, like, menacing hippies, and they take him in for a night in their caravan, but, like, shit gets really... I didn't think of those specifics, but I did. I kind of wanted to use the 60s setting a little more explicitly and tried to put more creepy horror spins on it.
Okay.
But the emotional catharsis thing was really important to me as well. And I think what I would use those to be is that he's trying to seek some kind of validation from other people in these weird situations that he actually has to get from himself. And I would like to imply by the end that he arrives at that funeral kind of ready to face this really terrifying moment of having to stand at your mother's grave.
Does he have a dog?
Sure.
Can he have a dog?
Yeah, he can have a dog.
All right, I haven't really thought this through at all. But the reason why I chose this movie is for just those moments of him at night walking alone and because of this weird thing that he does where he talks to himself. And so because I don't... This maybe sounds like I'm copping out on, like, what I want the story to be, but I kind of want there to be less story, and I just want to... I would be fine with just being, like, weird episodic, like,
God, I wrote your poem and it's creepy at night.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I don't want to take the whole story apart and have it not have this, like, go hitchhike with a ghost or whatever. But I kind of want to focus more on, like, gotta get home because mom's in the hospital. I think I do want to dig up the elements of his dad died young. And there's doubt in Alan's mind whether or not he actually did die, as his mom said, in a car accident. And then he thinks it might be suicide. I don't know that I even to this day, to right now, that I would want to answer the question of, like, was it suicide or not? But I kind of want to start the movie in a place where Alan is hung up on his father's death still.
Mm-hmm.
And he feels like there's unanswered questions. And he himself is, like, you know, maybe has a lot of anxiety in his college years and doesn't know what's going on or, like, where that comes from or what to do about it. And I want to have this, like, other Alan be, like, a sort of coping method he's developed of, like, a way to talk things out. And I want to have it be, like, a much more present figure in the movie. So that having, like, a lot of the movie just being, like, him talking ostensibly to himself in between these, like, weird episodes of, like, you know, somebody yelling at him on the road and him trying to flip them off and then getting chased by them because they decide to go beat the shit out of him. And, like, like, I like all of those elements. And I still think I would maybe want the ghost, but, I kind of want it to just be him. I like the idea of, like, showing his childhood with his mom and also showing how he maybe doubts how his dad died and having that be, like, a point of maybe contention that, like, did my mom lie to me about this? Why would she lie to me? I kind of want to maybe the movie does this to some extent where, like, you know, when he didn't want to ride the bullet, his mom got mad at him, but, like, I want to paint more of a picture of, like, maybe it wasn't entirely a rosy childhood,
mm-hmm.
and maybe his mom wasn't always the best mom. Maybe
mm-hmm.
she had flaws, and there was things she did wrong. And having that all weigh in his mind as he's, like, hitchhiking home to I've heard, like, having both of you guys decide, like you said, he should choose himself, not his mom.
Mm.
And you said he chose his mom at a young age before he knew what he was doing. Like, that's kind of why I'm, like, I don't know what to do with the hitchhiking ghost thing, because,
mm-hmm.
like, I agree that it's, like, choosing his mom at that point in that movie is, like, a weird, like, backwards thing for him to do.
Yeah.
But I don't really, I think the other way around is also too, like, opposite. It's too, like, not rosy, because it's not really rosy, but it's too, like, oh, now he's suddenly, like, a noble
yeah.
self-sacrificial.
I think
right.
it's a hard snag to throw in this late into a movie.
Yeah, it really is.
Especially because it almost feels like it's a...
I kind of
want to... False dichotomy is the wrong word.
I guess, like,
same
I don't... I want to take out the Stephen King shit of it. And have it no
yeah.
more Jack and Ghost. I just want to have that question be sort of, like, an unasked question in the movie of, like,
mm-hmm.
if you had to choose, would it be you or your mom?
Yeah.
Like, I think it's a good thing to have be a present in the movie. Like, what if you could choose?
Yeah.
Maybe present it that way would be better. Like, you could save your mom if
yeah.
you picked yourself. Instead of, like, you have to
right.
pick. Sort of like a glass half full versus a half empty situation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, instead of it being, like... If your mom doesn't die, then you have to die. Have it be like, you could save your mom, but you have to die. Maybe the other Alan... Okay, that's what it is. The other Alan is actually the one that poses it to him. So there's no
oh,
ghost. It's
yeah,
just
yeah.
like a sort of like dark, guilty thought that he
yeah.
has walking alone at night. Like,
and it's embodied in other Alan.
Yes. Because I think that's... It sort of brings to mind the Babadook of like...
Mm-hmm.
These like dark things you don't want to acknowledge that you think. Like,
mm-hmm.
your kid's a pain to raise and you wish you could just strangle them sometimes. Like... That's the kind of thing I want to get into of, like, wouldn't it be easier if mom was dead?
Which, honestly, that's some good material for a horror
yeah,
movie.
Especially,
yeah.
like, what I was thinking about, too, is, like, you know, if your mom is not a healthy person, and this is not the first scare you've had, and she's now had a stroke, maybe a part of you is, like, maybe now I don't have to have this worry anymore.
Yeah.
And,
it's
or...
It's just over with.
If you wanted to play it in a different direction, if she was somehow abusive or their relationship was not great...
Yeah.
There could be this interesting idea
I don't
want to
make
like,
it that easy, though.
Mm.
The dark part of you is like, but what if?
Yeah, but I don't want to make it that easy of saying, like, well, she was a bad mom.
Yeah.
Right.
I kind of want it to be more like maybe she was a bad mom at times, but she was also a good mom at times.
Yeah.
But just the just like, again, those, like, when you're alone and thinking these awful thoughts that you don't want to think, but you did, and having the guilt of that. I think that's what the heart of a Stephen King novel is before it inserts a weird ghost into it. And I think that's what I want to do without the weird ghost.
Is explore the lizard brain part of someone
yeah.
in that moment. Yeah.
That's it. That's what I would do.
I like it.
Yeah.
All right. That's all I got, guys.
That's all I got,
oh,
too.
What's the last thing we do, though?
Would you recommend
it? Would you recommend this movie?
I
recommended it. I did it to you
true,
guys.
True, you did.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I can't say no.
I would hope you wouldn't say no.
You know what? I actually think
surprise,
I would
you fools!
Yeah.
I think I would recommend this movie... if anything about what we've discussed sounds interesting to you, there are things about this that are cool.
I would say skip the first half hour.
Yeah.
Yeah,
there's
to be fair, you
cool
could.
There's a lot of cool vignettes at that at night. That
if
happens.
You want to just fast forward pretty much until the point where, like, the hippie, like, crashes,
yeah,
you could start there and you're not going to miss a whole lot. You'll pretty much infer what's happened before that.
Yeah. Really, none of the shit from the beginning comes back in a meaningful way.
Yeah. So, I'd give it, like, a half-hearted recommend. It's free, as we said. It's on Vudu, so it's free.
You're also not missing anything if you decide not to.
Yeah, and it's short, so it's not going to take up a whole lot. It's similar to Shock Treatment. It's, like, around 90 minutes or so. So,
yeah.
Like, you could if you wanted to. I feel like if you asked me if I wanted to see it again, I'd probably say no, but I've also seen it like 3 times.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to rewatch this.
I might. We'll find out.
Yes, we will.
All right, guys, that's all I got today. All
right, so you can go to our website at www.dratpack.com. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/whywatchpodcast. And we'll be back in 2 weeks with a mini episode where we talk about what our next October movie is. I think it still will be in October by the time that comes out.
I believe so, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That'll be the next mini. Because that's our, yeah.
But we don't believe in Thanksgiving. We just believe in Halloween.
Yeah, we don't really care about Thanksgiving because there's not that many
about
good Thanksgiving.
Spooksgiving.
Yeah,
Spooksgiving.
Sure. Franksgiving because it's Frankenstein, the scariest of all monsters.
And we're going to eat Franks. All right. Anyway.
Sorry. Franksgiving's monster. I'm sorry. All right. So that's about all we got, right?
Yeah.
Shall we light up?
Yeah. Bye.
Bye.
Good sense, ill sense, crippling mankind. Dead kings, many things I can't define. Old Cajun spice, wagons, blood to your mind.